Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.
Merkle Media.
Lashback Fridays here at Macroaggressions. We're going back to June 3rd, 2020, episode number 27, Drill Baby Drill. If you're interested in converting some of your soon-to-be worthless fiat currency or maybe even your retirement accounts into physical precious metals like gold and silver, go to our website, www.macroaggressions.gold, and Tony over at Wise Wolf Gold and Silver will hook you up. Now, please enjoy the show.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Look, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary's Tech Theratrix.
I am Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison? Swangled in Fort Lauderdale.
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff to German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault?
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Hello, everybody. This is Charlie Robinson. I am the host of Macroaggressions. Thanks for checking us out. If you want to follow me on social media, you can go to facebook.com/theOctopusOfGlobalControl. I'm now back on Twitter under a fake name. You can find me at Macroaggression, but that last N, change it to the letter to the number three. I'm going to put the links in the description so you guys can just click on that. If you have questions, you can find me at theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. If you like the show, please feel free to share it with friends and family or put it in your social media groups and things like that. Certainly need to get the word out. Really appreciate your support. This is going to be called Drill Baby Drill, and it has nothing to do with oil. We've talked about false flags. We understand that they're a real thing. Obviously, they've been around for a long time, starting with the pirates, probably before that, but that's where the name comes from. And they've been used for a long time because they're very effective. I mean, they'll continue to pull them as long as they continue to work. And they work really well because at its core, most people just can't even comprehend the idea that a government would attack itself and then blame it on another government, or a person would attack themselves and blame it on another person. We're starting to see that a little bit more in our day-to-day lives of, you know, the media. Jussie Smollett was a prime example. False flag. I mean, it's not called that, of course, but when you pretend like you beat your, you pretend like you got beat up by a bunch of MAGA guys, this is MAGA country, and then it turns out it was some guys that you hired to do it for you, that is a form of false flag. So if it makes it easier to think of it that way, in that conceptual way, you can do it. Another way to describe that would be a drill, right? He didn't actually go through with it. You know, it was somebody else pouring bleach on him, putting a noose on his neck and all that. It was a fake event made to look like a real event. And we see that all the time. They don't call them drills for the most part, but that's what they are. And what we're going to get into in this episode is we're going to talk about some of them, not just in generalities, but we're going to get into detail on some of these false flags. And like everything, I'm going to pull some excerpts out of my book, The Octopus of Global Control. The format of that book was that I brought in quotes from over 500 different people that had a role or an opinion on some of the most important events in our history. So you're going to get a lot of quotes, and I like to read them in the podcast because it paints a picture that's very helpful in understanding some of these concepts, because you're hearing them not just from me, of course, but you're hearing them from other people. So let's just jump right into this one with Captain Eric May, former Army military intelligence officer. And he said, the easiest way to carry out a false flag attack is by setting up a military exercise that simulates the very attack you want to carry out. This is exactly how government perpetrators in the US and UK handled the 9/11 and 7/7 terror attacks, which were in reality government attacks blamed on terrorists. The next 9/11, constantly promised by officials in the media, is likely to be carried out under the guise of future military exercises. And this guy's exactly right. You know, most people don't, they don't think about the idea of somebody attacking themselves. But so it's very foreign. The first time you bring that up to somebody, or the first time you hear about it yourself, you're kind of like, why would they do that? Or how would they do that? Or no, that sounds unrealistic. I mean, somebody would put a stop to this. Somebody would call them out, or these guys would have a conscience or anything. And it's a logical way to think about it. But unfortunately, you're using logic from a sane, rational perspective and trying to impose that on people that are irrational and psychopathic. And they just don't think like us. They think like the ends justify the means. And if I have to fake an event, or if I have to, you know, create an event and pin it on someone else in order to put my plan into action, then the ends justify the means in their warped way of looking at reality. That's dangerous, of course, but we can't discount it, and we shouldn't pretend like that's not a real way of approaching these problems, because for these people, that is how they do it. In fact, it's tempting to want to bury our heads in the sand and just say, that doesn't happen. I'm not going to think about that. That's crazy talk. But the reality is that it does happen. We do need to be aware of it, not because we're going to pull it off or anything, but because if you know their plans or you know their playbook, then the next time you see something like that, you will have the benefit of knowing, hey, this might be a false flag, or this might be a drill made to look real. And I think that one of the best examples of a drill that was made to look real was the Boston bombing. And people kind of forgot about that one. I mean, it was a big deal at the time, but there were problems with that whole scenario. Major problems. You don't need to be a black belt level conspiracy theorist to look at the Boston bombing and find flaws in it. You can be some random dude who just happens to be on Twitter and realize that it was a false flag attack. It was a drill made to look live. Why do I say Twitter in particular? Well, because if you were following the Boston Globe, what you would their Twitter account, what you would have noticed was that on two different occasions, 2 minutes apart, the Boston Globe tweeted out, there is going to be a drill simulating an explosion at the library at so-and-so address. And then, you know, like I said, then 2 minutes later, there was a second one saying, drill simulating, you know, an explosion drill is about to take place at this area. And then, boom, it goes off. So, I mean, you can dig into this all you want and do as much research as you want. And I encourage that. But all you really need to do is ask yourself, how did the Boston Globe know that there was going to be a drill simulating an explosion before the Boston bombing went off? And the answer is because it wasn't a real bombing. Nobody got killed. Nobody got hurt. Maybe the Tsarnaev brothers got killed and hurt. And Kotashev, who definitely got killed. But as far as all the people there participating in this, it was a gigantic charade. It was a big hoax. It was a big drill. It was a role-playing event. It was a LARP. Now, if this is the first time you're hearing that, you might be mad at me for saying that. I understand. I understand the psychology of that. I understand why you might get mad, but hear me out on it. I'll go through some details, things that you probably didn't hear. I mean, like most stories, like most of these events, if what you know about the event came from the mainstream media, then you know nothing about the event. That's just the facts. That's just the honest truth. So much of what really happened gets buried from the corporate news, intentionally, of course. So if you're under this sort of delusion that, oh, well, if the Boston Globe had put those two tweets up there, then surely I would have heard about it on my nightly news. You need to kind of refresh the way you look at things, because you have to understand that that's not going to be on the nightly news. They're not trying to get to the bottom of this bombing. They're telling a story. The story is not true. That doesn't matter. They're telling it anyway. So let's read this from Robert David Steele, former CIA agent, a guy that pulled false flags, admittedly himself. He knew a little something about that. Boston bombing, for me, the truth teller, was when the rabbis and the priests rushed to comfort the wounded and they were not allowed to get near any of the wounded. That, in intelligence, we call an indicator. And then you add to that the fact that there was no, and I mean no, wounded people taken to the hospital. And finally, you add to that the big to-do about the amputee. He turned out to be a hired actor for a company that specializes in putting amputees into battlefield simulations. False flag. Boston was a practice attempt to lock down an entire city. So, you know, there's many inconsistencies with the official story that, when examined, clearly show that the story the media told the world was just simply not true. The mainstream media sold this turd to the American people, and they bought it without asking any probing questions or confirming the authenticity of the information. Go back and just take a look at the event again. But this time, pay attention to a few different signs to watch for that you would easily miss the first time around. So let's begin by clarifying the official story of the Boston Marathon bombing. So here are the facts that the media claims to be true. Okay, this is the official story. Just going to read off a list of these. An explosion at the finish line of the marathon killed 3 civilians. 264 people were injured and treated in 27 local hospitals. 14 people required amputations as a direct result of the blast. The perpetrators of the terrorist event were two brothers, Tamerlan and Dzhokhar Tsarnaev. They made a bomb out of a pressure cooker and put it inside of a backpack. They left the backpack near the finish line of the Boston Marathon. The police and feds launched a manhunt for the two brothers that lasted 4 days. The murder of an MIT police officer sitting in his car was attributed to the brothers. the police and feds released the dark and grainy closed-circuit television footage of the shooting. The two brothers carjacked a person in a Mercedes SUV who later escaped when they stopped at a gas station. Both brothers confessed to the driver about pulling off the marathon bombing. They confessed to planning to drive to New York City to set off another bomb in Times Square. The carjacking victim left his cell phone in the car, which enabled the police to track the location of the two brothers to Watertown. A gunfight with police broke out, in which the older brother was shot several times, tackled by the police, and then accidentally run over by his younger brother with the stolen SUV and dragged 30 feet. The younger brother ran away from police and hid in a covered, dry-docked boat. He wrote a confession statement at night, without any lights, in his own blood, in which he claimed the bombing was retaliation for the U.S.'s wars in Muslim countries. Two police officers and an FBI agent visited a friend of the brother in Orlando, Florida, Ibrahim Todashev. They questioned him for many hours in his apartment, but forgot to take him to the police station so the interrogation could be filmed. During this undocumented interrogation, Todashev confessed to being involved in three murders with one of the brothers, one of the bomber brothers. In the middle of writing his confession, Todashev decided to attack the FBI agent by throwing a table at him. Todashev then ran at the agent with a metal pole, not a table, and was shot three times. Todashev staggered backward, regained his footing, and came at them again with a metal pole. Todashev was subsequently shot four more times, including one shot to the back of the head. The police changed their story from Todashev swinging a metal pole to him swinging a sword. The police changed their story from swinging a sword to swinging a broomstick. The police changed their story from swinging a broomstick to swinging a knife. The two officers left the room a short time before the killing. The FBI agent, Aaron McFarlane, shot Todashev seven times. Aaron McFarlane had previously been the subject of two brutality lawsuits. Aaron McFarlane had previously been the subject of four internal investigations. Aaron McFarlane had been accused of falsifying police reports, lying under oath, aggravated battery, making false arrests, violating the rights of suspects, assault with a weapon, and false imprisonment, yet was never convicted of any charges. Aaron McFarlane took the fifth during a police corruption trial during his brief four-year career as an Oakland police officer. So, the official story of the Boston bombing would be hilarious if it wasn't so goddamn scary, but, you know, there's nothing to see here. So, back to those tweets. So that is the just bullet point list of what was said in an official capacity about the bombing. The interrogation of Ibrahim Todashev at the end, he wasn't one of the brothers. He was just another guy. If you recognize the picture, he's got kind of a Justin Bieber mop cut. He's got like a crooked nose. Looks like it's been broken a bunch of times. He was this guy that they just like, you know, said he came at him with a samurai sword and a broomstick, and this, you know, horrible FBI agent shot him seven times, including once in the back of the head. These are all confirmed. Like this isn't speculation. They admitted to all of this. Here's the tweets I was talking about, at Boston Globe. Tweet number one, 12:53 PM. All capital letters. Breaking news. Police will have controlled explosion on 600 block on Boylston Street. Tweet number two, 12:53. Officials. There will be a controlled explosion opposite the library within 1 minute as part of bomb squad activities. This is from the Boston Globe. They tweeted this out before the bombing. No, nobody's talking about this. This is kind of a problem. They're talking about the police will have a controlled explosion. 600 block of Boylston Street. That's where the race ended. There will be a controlled explosion opposite the library within 1 minute as part of bomb squad activity. That's where the race ended. That's where this bomb went off. Like I said, step one, the tweets. End of story. End of story. But there's more, of course. There's a whole lot more. You can, if you go online, there's a video of seconds before the explosion in which you can hear over the loudspeakers. I've watched this video. You can hear it clear as day. This is a drill. This is a drill. It says it twice. About 3 seconds later, you hear an explosion, followed by a second one a couple of seconds later. I mean, it's over the loudspeaker. This is a drill. Here's a quote from Allie Stevenson, University of Mobile cross-country coach. He was there for the race, and he had an interesting take on this. He said, at the start line this morning, they had bomb spotters on the roof of the buildings, and they had bomb-sniffing dogs coming up and down the start line. And Melanie, his wife, said they had bomb-sniffing dogs at the finish line, but they kept making announcements saying to the participants, do not worry, this is just a training exercise. And we were told on a loud announcement that we shouldn't be concerned. It was just a drill. So maybe it was just a drill. But I mean, I was there at the Athletes Village and I did see a drill going on and did hear the announcements that it was just a drill. Yeah, you know why? Because it was fucking drill. That's what it was. Now you bring this up to around your friends that have never heard of this, and they will think that you are out of your mind. They will think that you are smoking crack with Mary and Barry. But this is what this is the insanity of the media. When they get involved, they cover these things up. They promote certain aspects of a story. They silence others. If they were really trying to get to the bottom of this, it would have been exposed right away. Now, we'll go on. So, not only this, but according to Department of Homeland Security documents that were acquired by the Boston Globe, they were planning on conducting training exercises simulating a fake terrorist group called Free America Citizens that was planting backpacks full of explosives around Boston. Let's hear what Maria Kramer, Boston Globe, June 8th, 2013, had to say about this. The scenario had been carefully planned. A terrorist group prepared to hurt vast numbers of people around Boston would leave backpacks filled with explosives at Faneuil Hall, the Seaport District, and in other towns, spreading waves of panic and fear. Detectives would have to catch the culprits. Months of painstaking planning had gone into the exercise dubbed Operation Urban Shield, meant to train dozens of detectives in the greater Boston area to work together to thwart a terrorist threat. The hypothetical terrorist group was even given a name, Free America Citizens, a homegrown cadre of militiamen whose logo would be a metal skull wearing an Uncle Sam hat and a furious expression, according to a copy of the plan obtained by the Boston Globe. But 2 months before the training exercise was to take place, the city was hit with a real terrorist attack executed in a frighteningly similar fashion. What a fucking coincidence that is, wouldn't you say? What are the chances that it happened exactly like this drill was planning to enact it? Well, the chances are actually pretty good if you understand how these drills work. Goes back to that first quote about how they will do this under the guise of a military exercise. It always happens that way. So, you know, these terrorists would plant fake devices and then stay on the scene to monitor and record the bomb squad and detectives as they responded. But the insane twist was that all detectives would not know they were part of a drill. So, like, as far as they knew, they thought they were responding to an actual terrorist event. The goal of the training was for these detectives to figure out the motives of the Free American Citizens terrorist group, and, you know, a non-existent group that they believed to be real. So what they were doing was they weren't even telling the cops that this was fake. They were telling them it was real. Kind of like they did with us. Like, some people knew it was a drill, And some people didn't. We didn't. We weren't told that. So this is just, you know, it's just it's an uncanny resemblance to what actually, what allegedly happened in the Boston bombing. So this is a police spokesman discussing Urban Shield saying, "We can't talk about what we're doing for emergency preparedness. The people who participate in this don't know what the scenario is." What a coincidence that the imaginary terrorist event that they were simulating actually happened in the exact same way, at the exact same place, at the exact same time as the drill of people leaving backpacks filled with explosives near the marathon. To be clear, the Department of Homeland Security isn't denying that the training exercise manifested itself at the Boston Marathon. A Boston police official told the Boston Globe in a report, quote, "The real thing happened before we were able to execute." It's just amazing, right? But all of these events, they're not coincidences. They're training simulations that go live. But the problem is that they never remember to tell the participants or the citizens after the fact that it was all a training simulation. They all seem to forget that one little important part. Of course, you know, they're not forgetting. It's done on purpose, as we know. I'm being sarcastic here. But people that watch the aftermath news coverage about the Boston bombing event came to hear about the star of the show, the guy Robert David Steele was talking about, the guy that had his legs blown off. His name was Jeff Bauman. And he heroically lived through the terrorist attack because of the quick thinking of the guy in the cowboy hat, Carlos Arredondo. Jeff and his stumps were loaded onto a wheelchair and whisked away. And then 19 days later, he dropped the ceremonial first puck at a Boston Bruins hockey game. Except now his legs are missing above the knee. And then lastly, he's wheeled out before a Boston Red Sox game, and he doesn't have any legs at all. So, I mean, this poor guy, it just keeps getting worse for him. I mean, listen, Jeff, if the Boston Celtics call, don't go, or you'll just be a head sitting on a pillow when they get done with you, you know? Or maybe we should call Jeff Bauman Lieutenant Nick Vaught instead. Isn't that right, Nick? Because that's who you really are. You're not Jeff Bauman. You're a guy that had your legs blown off in Kandahar, Afghanistan, in November of 2011, when he was with the 1st Striker Brigade, 25th Infantry Division. This guy is a crisis actor. If that's the first time you're hearing that term, it's a legitimate thing. I'm not making this up. There are companies that specialize in crisis actors. That's what this Jeff Bauman slash Nick Vaught guy is. He's a crisis actor. He's got his legs blown off in Afghanistan, but he's joined up with this company, and they used him as a guy that, you know, had his legs. You really need to examine the crime scene pictures of the Boston bombing to get a real, like, while you're listening to this, if you're in a position where you can pull them up on the internet, please do, because what you'll notice is that everything about it looks wrong. You can watch not just the pictures of it with the red that is so deep red, it looks like red paint. When blood is laid out for a long time, it changes color. It has to do with the oxygen and everything, but it doesn't look like bright red paint. It just doesn't, but that's what is going on there. But you can also watch the videos of it. And some guys have done some really remarkable work of zeroing in on stuff. You can watch there are certain people that are handlers. You can watch them pull out little bags and squirt blood all over the place. I'm not making this up. I know it sounds crazy. I know I sound totally unhinged right now, but you've got to go and find these videos because you can watch it and it's just impossible to see anything else. Plus, the guy didn't apply the tourniquets properly to the legs. He would have bled out in 3 minutes if he had lost both of his lower legs where they were. They put him in a wheelchair, which is the last thing you do to somebody like this. And this Carlos Arredondo guy starts wheeling him out towards you know, the ambulance. No blood, by the way. No blood pouring out all over the place. There's no trail of blood behind this wheelchair, because it's not real blood. It's staged craft. It's staged blood. It's all those things. So, so the fake crisis actor told the FBI, this Jeff Bauman guy told the FBI that the bomber looked him in the eyes before leaving his backpack beside him. Oh, okay. All right. Investigation closed. Thank you, Jeff. We got it all squared away now. Thanks so much. What a bunch of dog shit that is. But, you know, good thing that that the FBI was able to quickly circulate a photo of the bombers, because, you know, with their backpacks. But, you know, they had no choice. They had to kind of get out in front of the story, because, you see, once the FBI asked for the public's help with identifying the alleged bombers wearing backpacks, the leads and photos came pouring in. So why were the leads and photos pouring in, you may be asking yourself? Well, there were over a dozen Kraft International plainclothes private mercenaries near the finish line and on the roofs of adjacent buildings at the Boston Marathon, wearing tan cargo pants, tan boots, black jackets, black hats with the Punisher logos, and black backpacks. Do you want photos of people near the bombing wearing backpacks? Here you go. General public has lots of them. They have pictures of all these Kraft guys wearing backpacks, and they even have a picture of one guy from Kraft wearing a backpack before the bombing, and the same guy running away from the scene after the bombing without a backpack. Funny, that never made the nightly news, did it? They didn't show up at that guy's house and unload 1,000 rounds of ammunition into a boat parked in his driveway, did they? It took a while, but the DHS has now officially acknowledged the, quote, frighteningly similar scenarios between Operation Urban Shield drill they had planned for Boston and the actual marathon bombing event in the Boston Globe article. It's, it's tough to explain away this, frankly. And you notice you don't hear about the Boston bombing all that much anymore. It's kind of forgotten. And the reason is because if you dig into it, if you just get a wild hair up your ass and decide, oh, I'm going to look into it, it takes about 15 minutes before you figure out that the entire story is a lie. And these poor bastards, these brothers, were set up. They're patsies, you know, like they always are. Who was handling them? The FBI, like they always are. What do you get when you get two low IQ guys that you can manipulate into being a part of this drill? Who knows what they told them? But you notice one thing, they're never able to speak. One guy got shot up a bunch of times and run over. And then the younger brother had something happen to his throat, choked out or something, or shot in the throat or whatever. But he was never able to speak about it. Then went to trial. We never had any cameras in the trial. He was just convicted and gone away. You know, so the Boston bombing was just a drill. Nobody died. Nobody lost their legs. But we certainly hope somebody lost their job as a crisis producer, because it looks like they brought in the JV team to run this drill. It was really, really sloppy, and they should be, frankly, they should be embarrassed themselves for the job that they did on the Boston bombing back in 2013. Let's take a quick break so that we can hear from the sponsors that make this show possible, like Delete Me. The tech giants make a fortune selling your personal information to all kinds of outlets for them to use as they please. Delete Me
removes your personal information like name, address, age, phone number, email address, and photos of your home from leading data broker sites. Removing personal information from data broker websites reduces your online footprint and removes Google search results. These guys really understand opt-out and privacy policies, so you don't have to spend your time focusing on things like legal jargon. Delete Me has been featured in the Wall Street Journal, New York Times, NPR, and CNET. And with over 20 million personal listings removed, Delete Me is the most trusted and proven privacy solution available, so check them out by using the link in the description to see just how they can take back your personal information. And Fiverr is an outstanding resource. If you need somebody to outsource some of your work to, or you just need specialized help with a project that you're working on, you need to check out Fiverr. They have a network of thousands of freelance experts in business, design, programming and tech, digital marketing, music and audio, video and animation, writing and translation, and so much more. Need someone to build out a website or help you grow your current business with a digital marketing campaign? You can find thousands of people ready to get to work on your project at a fixed price that you set at Fiverr. Your payment's only released to the freelancer once you're pleased and approve the work you've received. If you have questions, you can call Fiverr 24/7. Just click the link in the box in the description. Start putting this army of freelancers to work for you. And Cash Advance. We are living through a very strange time filled with an unbelievable amount of uncertainty. We don't know what the world's going to look like weeks from now, let alone months from now. If you find yourself in a financial emergency and in need of money right away, you at least have an option with Cash Advance. You can submit your request online and receive an answer in minutes so that you will know where you stand and what programs they have available for you. Their online service is entirely free and works to find potential lenders in their network. So just fill out the secure online form and see which option works best for you. Look, I hope you don't need this service, but if you do during this crazy time in our lives, at least you know that you have another option with Cash Advance. Click the link in the description box to see what they have to offer. And with all of these sponsors, your support for them directly impacts and supports the show. We certainly do appreciate that. Now let's get back to the show. But it's not limited to Boston or America. These sorts of drills are happening all over the place. The 7-7 London train station and bus bombing is a prime example of this. So on July 7th, 2005, London was the victim of a terrorist attack in which several tube stations, subway stations, in a double-decker bus were bombed simultaneously. Hundreds of people were injured. 52 people died. This was the worst attack on British soil in a very long time, we were told. The number 30 bus was at Tavistock Square when the bomb went off, and it isn't a coincidence that it happened in London at a place called Tavistock. I don't know if you know about the Tavistock Institute, but that's the culture factory. That's where they manufacture trends and decide which songs go to number one, which movies are going to be successful. Had involvement by a guy named Dr. Alexander King, who was a co-founder of NATO and co-founder of the Committee of 300 and co-founder of the Club of Rome. Highly involved in this. This is a devious organization, Tavistock Institute is. And so, and they're just the types of people that would have a bombing or a fake bombing or whatever occur right in front of Tavistock Square as sort of a wink, wink, you know, to those involved. They'll understand what that means if they see it. So what we were not told about the 7-7 attack is that there was a counterterrorism drill taking place in London at the exact same time, simulating a bombing at several tube stations that just so happened to be, wait for it, the exact tube stations that were actually bombed. The double-decker bus that was scheduled to, you know, that was exploding in the simulations
Well, they turned out to be the exact same buses that were actually bombed. What a coincidence, you know? This drill featured like a mix of private industry consultants in conjunction with the public sector, like such as like police and counterterrorism experts and everything. So the London police claim that the bombers boarded the 7:40 a.m. train from Luton to King's Cross. From King's Cross, the group then split up and boarded three different trains that left at three different times, 8:35, 8:42, and 8:48. The official timetable shows that both the 7:40 train and the 7:46 train from Luton were actually canceled that day, meaning the bombers wouldn't have been able to get to the destination location as the official story claims. Oops. They forgot about that one. Their official story falls apart the minute you start to look at the train schedule and realize that the trains that the bombers were supposed to be on to get to the site, those trains had been canceled that day. They weren't running. So that's a problem. But it gets much, much worse than that. Peter Power, which sounds like a porn name to me. He owns a private security firm that was participating in the drill in London. And here's a portion of the transcript from his radio interview that he did on BBC Radio 5 Live's Drive Time. So let me just read this to you. Peter Power says, "At 9:30 this morning, we were actually running an exercise over a company of over 1,000 people in London based on simultaneous bombs going off precisely at the railway stations where it happened this morning. So I still have the hairs on the back of my neck standing upright." To which Peter Allen, the interviewer, says, "To get this quite straight, you were running an exercise to see how you would cope with this, and it happened while you were running the exercise?" Peter Power says, "Precisely, and it was about 9:30 this morning. We planned this for a company, and for obvious reasons, I don't want to reveal their names, but they're listening and they'll know it. And we had a room full of crisis managers for the first time they'd met. And so within 5 minutes, we made a pretty rapid decision. This is the real one. And so we went through the correct drills of activating crisis management procedures to jump from slow time to quick time thinking, and so on. Just in case you might be thinking that this was some sort of like misunderstanding or maybe like a hoax or someone with an axe to grind trying to set up Peter Power to make him look crazy or, you know, whatever. Let me read you another interview that Peter Power did that same day. He said, "Today, we were running an exercise for a company, bearing in mind I'm now in the private sector, and we sat everybody down in the city, 1,000 people involved in the whole organization, but the crisis team. And the most peculiar thing was based our scenario on the simultaneous attacks on an underground and mainline station. So we had to suddenly switch an exercise from fictional to real. And one of the first things is get that bureau number. When you have a list of people missing, tell them." And it took a long time. The interviewer then says, "Just to get this right, you were actually working today on an exercise that envisioned virtually this scenario?" Peter Power responds, "Almost precisely. I was up at 2:00 this morning because it's our job, my own company, Visor Consultants. We specialize in helping people to get their crisis management response. How do you jump from slow time thinking to quick time doing? And we chose a scenario with their assistance, which is based on a terrorist attack because they're very close to a property occupied by Jewish businessmen. They're in the city. And there are more American banks in the city than there are in the whole of New York. A logical thing to do." I mean, what are the chances that Peter Power was planning a simulation, a drill, about train stations getting blown up and double-decker buses getting blown up on a specific day at a particular time. And then those exact trains at those exact stations and those exact buses at their exact stations all blow up at the very same time on the very same day. What are the chances of that? I mean, let's be honest. 1 in a trillion? 0%, I would say. It cannot happen. This is how they do it. It's always disguised as a drill. It's always disguised as a drill. This is not the first example of it. It's not the second example of it. There's many more. It's just that when you look for these things, when you understand to look for a drill simulating something that is happening, what you find is that all of these terrorist events have drills connected to them. That's how you know that they are not what they appear to be. And look, I want to be clear about something. There are drills that remain drills, non-events, like the Boston bombing. And then there are drills that turn live and actually do happen, like the 7/7 attacks, where people are actually blown up. You know, the trains are really blown up. So it's not to say that every time there's a drill, that means nobody died. It just means that there's a drill that's happening as an excuse, the pretext to move people and personnel and equipment into position under the guise of it just being a drill. And then all of a sudden it turns live. I had a great conversation with Ole Damegaard about this one night at an Acapulco. We were talking about Operation Gladio. We were talking about false flag terror events. And obviously, if you know anything about Ole, his work, he's done remarkable work on digging into the symbolism and the clues that they leave behind. So, you know, just when you hear false flags don't mean that an event didn't happen. It just means that the event didn't happen the way we're told. It means that usually it's pinned, the blame for it is pinned on somebody else. Now, the event itself could happen, you know, could, like we watch 9/11, we watch the Twin Towers get hit by, you know, by airplanes and come down and everything. When I say it's a false flag, I don't mean that that's a fake event. I mean that the blame for the event is fake and some of the components of the event are fake. But it doesn't mean the event itself is fake. In the case of the Boston bombing, that was a fake event. That was a straight up drill where nobody got hurt. So just for clarification, but once again, it's not limited to Boston bombing and 7/7 and 9/11. It happens all the time. This is from from the San Bernardino shooting. This is from KTLA News. During the San Bernardino mass shooting, the call first came in at 10:59 a.m. of multiple shots fired from the area of 1365 South Waterman Avenue, San Bernardino Police Department Lieutenant Richard Lawhead said. The department's SWAT team was training nearby and was suited, ready to roll, and responded rapidly, Lawhead said. You know, I mean, I suppose it could happen, except that the problem is you've got reports from the Boston or from the San Bernardino shooting. You've got a lady that's inside the building calling her dad saying, they're in here shooting us. And he said, who's shooting? And she said, three white men with military fatigues that look like they're military. They're doing the shooting. Kind of a different story than a Muslim man and a Muslim woman who was 5 feet tall, 90 pounds, who by all accounts probably couldn't shoot an AK-47 straight at all, being, you know, having the blame pinned on them. What else happened during that? Right on schedule, they found a manifesto. And where did they find that? They found it in the alleged shooter's apartment. How did they find that? Well, they opened the doors and let the press go into the house, to this apartment where the husband and wife shooters allegedly lived. And those reporters discovered a manifesto sitting there. And then they also described the apartment as, quote, a veritable bomb manufacturing facility. So let me get this straight. the police knew that these people lived in this apartment. It's a veritable bomb manufacturing facility. They opened the front door, let all of the media, and when I say all the media, I mean there were like 30 of them that crammed in there. You can watch the video. They're all filming each other. They're all running around with cameras, contaminating the crime scene, and in an apartment that is a bomb manufacturing facility. Now, the only part of that story that makes any sense is if the police were hoping that the media would blow themselves to smithereens doing that. Otherwise, it doesn't make any sense. None of the story makes any sense. But who cares? Who cares about that? We've got an agenda to push. We got to demonize Muslims like crazy. You know, they're all out to get us. Don't you know? I mean, I know that because my news told me. Do you remember? Of course, you remember the Paris shooting at the Bataclan and the Café Bonnet Barrier in Paris. That shooting seemed pretty organic, right? Well, maybe. Let's hear what Chief of Emergency Services Pierre Cardi said. That same morning, the SAMU was running a multi-site attack exercise. This is something that, when we mention it now, seems unreal. As luck would have it, in the morning at the Paris SAMU, a multi-site attack exercise had been planned. So we were prepared. What needs to be known is there was a mobilization of police officers, firemen, EMTs, associations that came to participate, and we tried to save as many people as possible. What a coincidence. Once again, there's a multi-site terrorism attack in Paris, and that morning they were planning a drill for a multi-site terrorist attack? I mean, these guys are good. What about staying in Paris? What about the Charlie Hebdo attack? That didn't seem too weird, really, until you dig into it a little bit. Patrick Pelou, otherwise known as the luckiest man in the world, he worked at Charlie Hebdo, but happened to be next door at the time of the shooting. He rushed back to the office and immediately started helping out because he's also an EMT. And he started giving interviews right after, and immediately after, about how this was a war and how these terrorists needed to be stopped. If you've ever watched the video of the terrorists shooting, going around and shooting people, there's a couple things you can see. First of all, you can see X's marked on the road by where the cars are supposed to be, which, you know, may or may not be anything. But you'll see one video where there's a guy laying on the sidewalk and the terrorist comes by, walks by with an AK-47, aims it right at his head, pulls the trigger, and the guy just stops moving. You don't have to be a ballistics expert to know what an AK-47, a 7.62 millimeter bullet does to a human head. All you have to do is watch videos of them shooting watermelons to see what it will do. If a guy is a foot away from you and shoots you in the head with an AK-47, it is going to be ugly. It's not what happened in the video. The guy just stopped moving. But let's hear what this Patrick Pelou guy, the luckiest EMT in the world that happened to be next door. This is what he said when he was interviewed afterwards. It's a war. We're at war. We were treating war wounds made by war weapons with bullets that go in very fast, that break and burn and send a very strong shockwave, so it creates extremely serious injuries. The team tried to save a lot of people, but there were terrible wounds. Most were aimed to kill at the head, thorax, abdomen. Others were defensive wounds where people had put their hands up to their face. We tried to save a woman who had 9 bullets in her body, but she died upon arrival at the hospital. Oh. Yeah. He was also promoting his book while stopping to give, stopping to speak to anybody that was holding a microphone, right? What about the granddaddy of them all? What about 9/11? Have you heard that there were drills running during 9/11? If you think that the 7/7 bombing in London had some coincidences regarding the drills, you ain't heard nothing yet till you hear what was cooking on 9/11. So a drill called Vigilant Guardian simulated events that were actually happening. NORAD and the Joint Chiefs of Staff were conducting a joint mock hijacking exercise, which involved government-operated aircraft posing as hijacked airlines at the same time as the actual hijackings were happening in New York City and Washington, D.C. I get tired of saying what a coincidence, but what a fucking coincidence that is, right? If you want to confuse really smart people, what you do is announce that a drill will be conducted on a specific day in which there will be like a simulation. You know, as an example, airplanes getting hijacked by terrorists and flown into buildings. Then you go about actually having airplanes getting hijacked by terrorists and flown into buildings. And when the phone calls flood in from concerned citizens about a terrorist attack involving airplanes, everyone involved with running those drills will just assume that the calls are about the simulation they're running. And nowhere was that more evident than when the phone call came in to NEADS, which is the Northeast Air Defense Sector, a dispatcher to the FAA's Boston Center. He was asked to scramble F-16s to intercept a hijacked airplane on September 11th, 2001. He said, "Is this real world or exercise?" Now, the reason why he asked if this was real world or exercise is because they were running exercises simulating the exact same thing. He couldn't believe the coincidence of this. So he had to ask, is this real world or exercise? To which the response is, this is real world. And he's like, okay, you know. That uncertainty buys the perpetrators a little extra time without F-16s racing to the scene to blow the hijacked airplane out of the sky. Although that wasn't going to happen anyway, because Dick Cheney removed the authority to shoot down rogue airplanes from the military just 4 months before 9/11. And he handed that power to himself. And that was not accidental. So what was going on in 9/11 with the war games? So Cheney was managing multiple war games and terror drills, like Vigilant Guardian on 9/11, that paralyzed U.S. Air Force response. Dick Cheney was in charge of managing all training exercises throughout both the federal government and military agencies. Dick Cheney was in charge of it all, okay? This was achieved by presidential mandate in May of 2001. Like I just said, he gave himself this authority. Bush gave him that authority in May. There were multiple training exercises and terror drills on the morning of September 11, 2001, including exercises with military aircraft posing as hijacked aircraft, events simulating an attack from Russia coming over the North Pole and through Canada, and an unusual simulation where fake blips were added to the computer system of the FAA's air traffic controllers simulating incoming foreign airplanes. That had to have been really confusing for them. All of these simulations essentially paralyzed the ability of the Air Force to respond to the actual attack, even though it was difficult to tell if an attack was even real. An unknown individual or command center coordinated the war games, and although it was not confirmed, it is believed that that person was Dick Cheney. And he was in charge of managing a terror drill on the west side of downtown New York on September 11th called Tripod 2, as well as building a control center like the one Mayor Giuliani had in World Trade Center 7. So Dick Cheney was one of the main government officials deciding that such extensive war games would take place on 9/11, even though intelligence agency had information that terrorists were planning to hijack airplanes during that very week. So think of it like this. You've got the intelligence agency saying, we're getting chatter that there's going to be a terrorist attack happening during this week. And Dick Cheney says, great, let's run drills during that week. Let's put everyone out of position. So I'm going to read off a list of the drills and what they were, what the scenarios were. FBI training exercise in Monterey, California for FBI/CIA anti-terrorist task force that was running through 9/11. It diverted top FBI/CIA anti-terrorism and special operations agents and heavy equipment away from Boston, New York City, and Washington, D.C. and moved it all the way to California. All these people were in California when they should have been on the East Coast. Another drill, NORAD, annual readiness drill, Cheyenne Mountain, Colorado, Vigilant Guardian. This scenario was full battle staff levels to test entire organization. Another drill, Vigilant Guardian, NORAD needs U.S. Canada. This scenario was live fly hijacking and air defense. Hijack multiplication, diversion, and confusion. Next drill, NORAD/Joint Chiefs of Staff Vigilant Warrior. That was reported by Richard Clark. Another drill, Operation Southern Watch, that ran through 9/11. And that scenario diverted 174th Fighter Wing, New York Air National Guard, to Sultan Air Base, Saudi Arabia, to impose no-fly zones over southern Iraq. So they moved them out of the country. You know, just the fighter wing. Next drill, Operation Northern Watch, diverts 6 fighters from Langley Air Force Base, sent to Insukril Air Force Base, Turkey, to impose no-fly zone over northern Iraq. Operation Northern Vigilance diverts fighters, 350 personnel, to Alaska and northern Canada to counter Russian bomber drill. Another drill is Operation Northern Guardian, Kent Flak Air Force Base, Iceland, diverts fighters from Langley Air Force Base, Virginia, deployed to Iceland to counter Russian bomber drill. Are you starting to get the picture here? They're having these drills, and they're diverting resources to participate in these drills in places like Alaska, Monterey, California, Canada, Iceland, Turkey, and Saudi Arabia. They're clearing the deck. They're moving them all out. By the way, that's not all. Next drill, Red Flag, Nellis Air Force Base, diverts most F-15s of 71st Fighter Squadron, Langley Air Force Base, Virginia, D.C., 121st Fighter Squadron of Andrews Air Force Base, also deployed. So these are the bases that are right around Washington, D.C. They're getting all of their fighters moved out of the way. Next drill, Andrews Air Force Base, local drill, diverts 3 F-16s to North Carolina. Next drill, National Reconnaissance Office drill, Chantilly, Virginia. Simulated plane crash into high-rise government building. Drill. Next drill, Tripod 2, New York City. Response to biochemical attack, run from the backup command center at Pier 92, Hudson River. Next drill, Fort Myers, Virginia. Education Center training drill. Assembled and indoctrinated Pentagon first responders. Another drill, Timely Alert 2, Fort Monmouth, New Jersey, indoctrination of World Trade Center first responders. The next drill, World Trade Center emergency drill, South Tower, meeting called to assemble and silence unreliable outside contractors, possibly. They're having a drill in the World Trade Center that morning. Got a bunch of people, and where did that drill take place? 97th floor. What else happened there? Gigantic plane flew into it. Next drill, Global Guardian, Stratcom, Offutt Air Force Base, Nebraska, Barksdale Air Force Base, Louisiana, Minot Air Force Base, North Dakota, Whiteman Air Force Base, Missouri. Scenario, nuclear war fighting, Armageddon, deterrence of Russia and China during invasion of Afghanistan and Pakistan. Okay. Amalgam warrior drill. Large, live fly, air defense, and air intercept, tracking and surveillance drill. Air defense against foreign retaliation. So then you've got things like Apollo Guardian, U.S. Space Command. No details given. You've got AWACS drills ordered by NORAD commanders. Two AWACS aircraft takeoff from Tinker Air Force Base, Oklahoma, sent over Washington, D.C. and Florida. Surveillance of Capitol and President during coup. The AWACS are those airplanes that look like they have gigantic satellite dishes on the back of them. They are communication airplanes. You'll see those flying around every now and then. Next drill, Global Guardian Computer Network Attack. Scenario, enemy forces war-dialed STRATCOM telephone and fax systems. Bad insider has access to key C-cubed system missile launch option. So they're simulating somebody that's inside the base that has the launch codes. Next drill, STRATCOM, Strategic Advisory Committee, Offutt Air Force Base, Nebraska, Andrews Air Force Base, Maryland, Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, Dayton, Ohio. Scenario, three E-4B National Airborne Operations Center planes, doomsday planes, airborne. Passengers include Brent Scowcroft, Warren Buffett at Offutt. So what, I don't even know how many of those drills there were on 9/11. 20, maybe? It's pretty obvious now. It's impossible to... I mean, it would have been difficult to envision this in the days leading up to it. But now, in retrospect, looking back, all of those drills were set up during those times for a very specific reason. They wanted to move all the personnel, all the aircraft that would be that could be responding, they wanted to move them as far out of the region as possible. They left Washington, D.C., New York City vulnerable to attacks. It was like a stand down order in reverse. I mean, it was a stand, they were moved so far away that they couldn't be in a position to stop the attack from happening. And what we remember is the Norman Mineta quote, talking about this, the soldier that came in when they were in the PEOC, the underground facility connected to the White House, where Dick Cheney was down there, and that soldier was coming in saying, the plane is 50 miles out, the plane is 30 miles out, the plane is 10 miles out, do the orders still stand? To which Cheney responded, of course the orders still stand. Have you heard anything to the contrary? And of course, the order to still standing would be to allow that plane to enter. And the reason why people were asking, why didn't we scramble jets? I mean, Payne Stewart, the golfer, passes out. Everyone in his private jet passes out from a depressurized cabin, and they scramble two F-16s to intercept it right away. But we've got four hijacked airplanes leading everybody on a wild goose chase, and nobody decides to do anything about it. We don't scramble jets. Well, they wanted to, but there were no jets left. There was like six of them left to protect the entire East Coast. How does that happen? The generals that were in charge, the two generals that were in charge of NORAD and the Central Air Command, they got promoted after 9/11. Think about that. If I fell asleep on the job, if I'm a security guard at a warehouse and I fell asleep on the job and the warehouse gets looted while I'm sleeping in the office, what's going to happen to me? First of all, I'm going to get investigated to see if I left the door unlocked for my buddies to come in and actually do the stealing. But if that was figured out that that wasn't the case, what's going to happen to me? I'm going to get fired, of course. What's not going to happen to me? Certainly not going to get promoted. But that's what happened to these two generals after 9/11. So we have to take a step back. Take our emotions and our patriotism and the official story and all that stuff out of it, out of the equation, and look back on some of these events. And be honest with yourself about what you're seeing here. What doesn't look right? What doesn't sound right? 20 drills on 9/11? that open up the whole East Coast to be in a position for four airplanes to just fly wildly off course, like totally unmolested for 45 minutes. That should never happen. That can never happen. But it did. They call it a catastrophic failure. Bullshit. It was intentional. It's the only explanation for this sort of incompetence. So take a look. Go back and take a look at the Boston bombing. Go take a look at the San Bernardino shooting. Take a look at Charlie Hebdo and, of course, look at 9/11. The information's out there. It's not going to be on your nightly news. Nobody's going to package it up and hand it to you and explain. Nobody's going to, these maniacs are never going to say, all right, well, we'll tell you what really happened. It was all a big lie. It's up to you to figure it out for yourself. I'm more than willing to help out and give you my take on it and read some of the things that I found and read excerpts from my book and things like that to help you get started. But once you understand what to look for, the next time one of these events happen, you'll have like a mental checklist. You'll just be able to go through, oh, manifesto? Yep, got that. Oh, the suspect will die in the shooting? Yep, got it. Can't have anybody live to tell about it. You know, there'll be a drill simulating the exact same thing that happened that day. Yep, check. That happens. You find that all the time. Whatever happens will be blamed on Muslims to demonize them. Check. You know, you start to notice a pattern of things that happen, and you'll get to a point where you can call them out and make a list of the things. You could say to your buddy, hey, listen, you know, we just heard there's this new attack that just happened. I bet you these four or five things will happen. You watch. If these four or five things happen, then will you believe me that there's more to these events than what you're being told on TV? And the answer is, you know, there's a whole lot more. There is a whole lot more to the story than what we're being told. But it's up to us to wake up and figure it out for ourselves. If you like this podcast, please share it with your friends, family. Rate it. I think you can rate it. Follow me on my social media. Go to my website, The Octopus of Global Control. Send me messages. Send me questions. Whatever you want. I'm accessible and available. Thanks so much, guys. I'll talk to you soon.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
L-E-T-E-N-P-C.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Okay. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
You won't see the engineer that slams the Nissan Rogue's door 13,920 times, or the corrosive chamber that simulates 15 years of life in 5 months, or the Rogue heat-baked for over 300 combined hours. What you will see is a vehicle that can take punch after punch and keep rolling. Nissan, Number one in new vehicle quality among mainstream brands by J.D. Power. We put it through the worst, so you get its best. For J.D. Power 2025 U.S. initial quality study award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Awards based on 2025 model year. Newer models may be shown.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.